It is Tuesday, May the 9th, 2023. Welcome in, everybody, to episode 88 of Toe on the Slab, Pitching with David Cohn. We talk pitching each and every week with the five-time World Series champ and the former Cy Young Award winner, David Cohn, the research master, James Smythe, myself, Justin Shackle, our terrific producer, Dan Rourke, with us as well. Gentlemen, how are we doing on this fine Tuesday? We have a lot of work to do today, so are you geared up to go?
We're ready to go. You know, we're starting to, you know, you get out of April, now you're well into May. Now you're getting a bigger sample size of the Major League Baseball season. People are trying to take inventory. Everybody has to look internally now. You can't really make trades this time of year, but it still is an interesting point in the season. Almost 25% or so of the season kind of reaching that level. So good time to take inventory.
Let's go. And we have pitching injuries to some key World Series contenders, never mind playoff contenders. We're talking about championship-level contenders, so we'll touch on all of those. One came down before we were about to record here today. A lot of drama in Cardinal land as well, and we'll touch on the Yankees, of course, near the back end of the episode. David, what do you want to start off, though, with the opener this week?
Well, I just think maybe I'm a little biased because I was just on the West Coast, but it certainly feels like there's a shift in power. Maybe it's part of the schedule. There's more of a balanced schedule this year, but yeah, I'm watching the Dodgers and the Padres on Sunday night, and I just see the electricity in the stands in San Diego, a complete sellout crowd. They have more sellouts than anybody up to date right now, and then moving forward in the future. San Diego is lit up for the Padres. There are high expectations. We're finally getting a full look at what their lineup can be with Fernando Tatis Jr. now back. They really don't have any weaknesses in San Diego. By the way, the Dodgers are still good too. Max Muncy's had an incredible bounce back power-wise. They have still the best farm system in the big leagues, kind of the envy of the industry because of the way they draft and develop players, and there's an endless pipeline of players, and they're still the Dodgers. They still walk more than anybody. They still have some power in their lineup. They have a very disciplined approach out there. So, yeah, it feels like the best rivalry in baseball right now is the Padres and the Dodgers, coming off of last year's big playoff series. But San Diego's an interesting place to be right now. The fans are just lit up out there for that team and those players, and there's a love affair going on.
All right, Dodgers, that leads me to ask you. Go ahead, James. I'm sorry.
Sorry, just the Dodgers winning 8 of 10, and they're back where they usually are in the National League West, first place.
David, which team is the bigger show?
Right now, it's the Padres. It has to be. Their owner has really made a huge investment in that team and really gone out on a limb. Peter Seidler is an amazing owner. He's relentless right now. He has one thing in mind, and that is to take advantage of that San Diego market. There's nobody else out there. The Chargers are gone. They really are a one-horse town out there with the Padres, and he's really trying to seize the opportunity, seize the day out there, and he's done a fantastic job. But they have stars up and down their lineup, and now is the time for them. It's sort of like the Padres pushed all their chips to the middle of the table right now in terms of investments and long-term be damned. Who cares if we've got these players in their mid to upper 30s and we're tied up on, 5 years from now or 10 years from now? They're playing for right now, all in. And I admire that. I really do. And I think they're starting to just get going again. Juan Soto starting to get his normal production going, his swing back in order. As I said before, Tatis Jr., Manny Machado starting to swing the bat better after a slow start. So, yes, when they get clicking on all cylinders out there in San Diego, they have a chance to be as good as anybody.
Padres immediately made themselves into an elite team in a span of a few years, despite being in a small market. I've said it before, say it again. San Diego is one of the five smallest DMAs in the major leagues. It's a smaller market than Pittsburgh. So credit to San Diego, to Peter Seidler for pushing the chips in and saying, you know what, we're going to try to win because that's the name of the game.
And it's part of the reason why we have this topic right now. What's the best rivalry in baseball at the moment? Dodgers, Padres, hands down. One of the other more fabled rivalries in the sport, they met up for the first time on Monday. Cardinals and Cubs played each other for the first time in 2023. And it came after the Cardinals said that they are moving Wilson Contreras out from behind the plate for the time being. Now, we know St. Louis is off to a rough start, and they are beginning life first full season without Yadier Molina after 2 decades, essentially. They signed Contreras to a 5-year deal. They're pivoting 1 month into year one, and it did not look pretty once this news was relayed. John Mozeliak, head of their baseball ops, he told Ken Rosenthal, quote, "Some of the things that we expect, some of the things about the game that we've become accustomed to, I think he realized it's going to require more preparation," talking about Contreras. And the way this message was put out by Mozeliak and Ali Marmol did not look good. Now, the manager, Adam Wainwright, Jack Flaherty, they apparently had a meeting with Contreras on Sunday that went a long way, cleared the air. But both pitchers stood up for Contreras in talking with reporters on Monday. Overall, not a good situation. And I'm wondering, from a pitching perspective here, what do you believe are those things that the Cardinals are expecting from Contreras? Because I think Buster Olney said it perfectly in a tweet. Like, if Cardinals pitchers wanted Contreras behind the plate, he'd be behind the plate. He's not there, and there's a reason behind that.
Yeah, it is the shock of the industry right now, right? I mean, a long-term 5-year deal given to Contreras, and less than almost a month into his tenure that this big move happens. Let me start from the back and go to the front. From the back, I'm going to say he's going to be back catching probably sooner rather than later. He's your catcher. He's going to be your catcher. This is a desperation move because the team is really struggling. They're really in search mode right now. And that's what happens when you have a team that gets like 10 games below 500 this early in the season. You really feel panic. You got to do something to shake it up and get us out of this. And, you know, that's why they sent Jordan Walker down, you know, their version of Anthony Volpe. They sent down for whatever reasons, that, you know, defense, too many ground balls, whatever profile. But the reason they sent him down, the reason they made this change of catcher is because they're falling out of the standing so quickly and dropping to the bottom. And even if they do get hot later, they're going to waste that hot streak on getting back to 500. So that's desperation times down there. Now, secondly, the only thing I can say is personal experience in the year 2000, Joe Girardi was gone as my personal catcher. Jorge Posada stepped in. I really struggled. And throughout that year, Joe Torre gave me a series of personal catchers, whether it was Justin Turner at one point. There were several others that kind of cycled through for me to be a personal catcher. And I thought maybe the problem was the catcher. It wasn't. The problem was me. The problem was me, and the quality of my stuff had really diminished. And when you're a pitcher, you kind of get into search mode like that. You're like, wait a minute, you're not calling the right game. You start to grasp at straws a little bit. I have a sense that's what's happening in St. Louis. You know, it's easy to point to Wilson Contreras, but when you look at a lot of the highlights of Wilson Contreras catching, there's a lot of hanging pitches in the middle of the zone that are getting bashed, and his head goes down as the ball never reaches his glove. So I think that the St. Louis Cardinals pitching staff has to look within first and foremost, and to point a finger at a catcher that's been there a month, I don't think that's the problem. Maybe there's an adjustment period there. Maybe they need to get on the same page in terms of preparation a little better, but nonetheless, I think Wilson Contreras is going to be catching again, probably in a couple of weeks or within a month. He's going to be back in that catcher's role.
I agree. I think this is a very bizarre attempt to scapegoat Wilson Contreras over this. You sign him for his age 31 to 35 seasons, and you figure he's probably not going to be an everyday catcher by the end of the deal, but you thought it would last more than a month. You look at the Cardinals staff. Jordan Montgomery's been good. But Miles Michaelis, Jack Flaherty, Steven Matz, Jake Woodford, the other four starters all have ERAs over 5. The Cardinals are the only team to have 4 pitchers with 30-plus innings this year and all have a 5 ERA. This is uncharted waters for a lot of people, a lot of fans, a lot of young fans have never seen a bad Cardinals team. This is they're 12 games under 500 right now. They were 14 under a little while ago, and they haven't been that bad since they lost 89 games in 1997. So you look at the Cardinals staff and say, well, they almost went into the season constructed out of, you know, number 3 starters at best. So to blame the catcher for the shortcomings of the staff is a little off to me.
Yeah, you devalue him too. When you think about it, Contreras' offense at the catcher position is the surplus value there. You know, you put Contreras as a DH, and his offensive value, while still good, is diminished because the DH position is where a lot of thumpers are, where a lot of high offensive output production, you know, comes from the DH position. So you devalue him by taking him out of the catcher spot. His value is the surplus offense he gives you in the catcher's position, because there's not a lot of offensive production at the catcher position by and large in either league.
You have that X's and O's standpoint. I just think the glaring issue here is the way the message was sent out by the team. I mean, you left Contreras pretty much high and dry, and now they're backtracking. Like Adam Wainwright said yesterday, hey, aside from Jordan Montgomery, yeah, our pitching has sucked, to put it plain and simple. And he even offered to have Contreras be his catcher on the day he was starting. You know, Wainwright coming off the injured list and obviously is that leader in that clubhouse. But I just think the message could have been handled a little bit differently. They could have put a little bit more thought on how they were going to communicate that, hey, maybe for the time being, Wilson will be a DH. Like, you had a hard shift. He's going to the outfield. Like, hey, let's rethink some things there. Bad job optic-wise in terms of relaying the message from the Cardinals. Ironically,
agreed completely. Well said.
Ironically, his former team in the Cubs, they enter the day second in the majors in ERA. They are tied for the best WHIP. They are third in batting average against. Only the Rays have allowed fewer hits as a pitching staff than the Chicago Cubs. Is the Cubs pitching staff for real in 2023?
Well, I think so. Stylistically, they keep the ball in the ballpark. You know, when you think about Marcus Stroman's always been one of the highest ground ball rate pitchers in the big league since he's been around. Justin Steele has only given up two home runs too on the year and hadn't had a great year. As we're going to talk about him a little bit later, I think, in terms of he's in the top five in ERA. But yeah, when I look at style, I look at, you know, keeping the ball in the ballpark. And nowadays too, it's about being athletic on the mound, adjusting to the pitch clock, holding runners at first base. Do you have a good pickoff move? Do you field your position well? You know, these are sorts of things that kind of are starting to show up more and more with pitchers. Whereas, you know, years past, it's like, I don't really have to worry about the running game. I don't have to worry about being athletic on the mound in terms of a pickoff move or varying my delivery or things where athleticism shows up on the pitcher's mound. I think when you look at the Cubs top to bottom, they have good athletes on the mound and they keep the ball in the ballpark.
The rotation and the bullpen, both in MLB's top six in homers per nine. So there they are, keeping the ball in the park for you, Coney. Marcus Stroman has been really reliable at the top of the rotation so far. And Justin Steele, he's for real. He showed a little bit of a breakout last year, and he's showing this isn't a fluke. Drew Smyly, out of nowhere, seeming having a terrific start to the season. Hayden Wesneski struggled a little bit early, got knocked around in a couple games, but he's picked things up. And I know he missed some time and he struggled in his first game off the injured list, but don't forget about Jameson Taillon. He's a very solid presence in that rotation. I think he'll help them going forward.
Yeah, the carryover effect with Justin Steele makes me believe that this is for real with him. I want to see more from Stroman. Smyly, obviously, we know what Taillon could be if he maintains his health. So it's very promising for the Cubs. They called up a couple of interesting position players too over the last week. They called up Matt Mervis, who's a big time prospect, Christopher Morel, who basically showed that he's done with AAA. He was crushing it there and he can play all over the place. So the Cubs are competing. They're getting younger on the fly with some of these other moves. And they also have a blend of other winning pieces, players that, you know, can help you win now. You pair that up with the way the pitching staff performing, who knows, they're going to be at least a very fun team to watch.
Good balance too. When you look at David Ross as their manager, he's more of a people person, even though he's open-minded and continues to learn about the other side, the analytical side of the game and working with the analytics department, like every manager has to do nowadays, but kind of encompasses both sides, the people skills. Everybody loves David Ross, the way he communicates, former catcher. And then also his open-mindedness that if you have a growth mentality and you're a guy like David Ross that has great people skills, then that's a good combination nowadays. Somebody who can develop relationships with personal relationships with players, but also, you know, work with all the departments that you have to work with across the board in the front office for major league organizations.
Fans, more Toe in the Slab is coming up, but also coming up Mother's Day. And I'll admit, I'm that son who does wait till the last minute to find that perfect gift for mom. But I've already started doing some research here with Lightbox. And this is where I'm going to be going this year. This is where you should be going too. Let Lightbox lab-grown diamonds do all the work for you this year. Lightbox makes lab-grown diamonds that you'll love with pricing that you will understand. Whether it's sparkly studs, brilliant necklaces, some shiny bracelets, these gems will make mom's jaw drop. So whether it is for your mother or for your spouse, you get her a stunning stone from Lightbox lab-grown diamonds, it is a guaranteed win. Skip the socks this year. Instead, become the MVP of Mother's Day. Stand out with a gift that she's never going to forget. Use promo code THESLAB10. That's THESLAB, the number 10, for 10% off your purchase. Shop Lightbox lab-grown diamonds and use the code THESLAB10 for 10% off your purchase and make Mother's Day a win. All right, let's zoom over to the south side of Chicago's because the White Sox have won each of their last two series, but it has been ugly all around otherwise in 2023. And let's zoom in on Dylan Cease. He's a pitcher who finished second in the Cy Young voting last year. He is 0-2 with an ERA over 8 in his last five outings. On Monday, he allowed 7 runs. What is not working for Dylan Cease right now?
Yeah, I look at all the numbers. There's nothing that jumps off the page. You know, his velocity or his spin rate or his usage patterns. It might be the latter in terms of usage patterns. It looks like he's caught it between his curveball and his slider. He's got tremendous spin and tremendous break on both of those pitches. Sometimes for me, I threw a slider and a curveball that you get caught in between sometimes, and you forget. You know, which pitch is more effective in terms of the platoon advantage? Do I use my curveball more to lefties as a right-handed pitcher? Do I use my slider more to right-handed batters? And can I mix that up a little bit? And to me, it looked like his last start, he threw about 10 knuckle curves, and he wasn't very successful with them. And then he kind of just went back to a slider and had some success with the slider. His fastball still there and the velocity. You know, I think he's a bounce-back candidate. I think this might be just sort of a blip on the screen for Dylan Cease. I don't see any arm problems. I don't see any, you know, dip in stuff, quality of his stuff. The stuff plus is still there when you evaluate all of his pitches. It does look like he's caught in between in his breaking ball a little bit, between his knuckle curve and his slider usage. That could be a key moving forward in terms of him figuring that out, which to throw to which batter, you know, how to figure out. There's a formula. This is how I get right-handed batters out as a right-handed pitcher. This is how I get left-handed batters out by and large. And you kind of stick to that bread and butter basics. It looks like he's caught in between a little bit to me right now.
He had back-to-back starts against the Rays when he gave up a combined 10 runs. So I thought, oh, maybe he just got raised and it's just a little blip there. But 7 runs on Monday in Kansas City is eye-opening for a guy like Cease, who, like you said, Shaq, was second in the Cy Young last year. The slider is more hittable this year. Last year, going by StatCast run values, it was by far the most valuable pitch in the major leagues last year, minus 36 runs for that StatCast metric. Number one by far. Number two at minus 25 was Shohei Ohtani's sweeper and Sandy Alcantara's changeup, two more great pitches. But this year, it's at minus 3, which is good, not great. The batting average against the slider is up from 128 to 228. The slugging is up from 209 to 354. Again, not terrible, but there's a little less wiggle room there for Cease. Strikeout rate has ticked down a little bit. The walks are always high for him, even when he had his great season last year, double-digit walk percentage. But the strikeouts are down a little bit. It could just be a blip. And, you know, we're getting into the second week of May. Let's see how long this goes. And if we get into June, then you can really start to sweat it out.
He said after his start Monday that he's not as consistent with the slider as he needs to be. He thinks he's making improvements, but said that the results are disappointing. He said he's close. So, David, I think what you were saying tends to be accurate, but I'm wondering how difficult is that for a pitcher to accept? You know that your stuff is improving while the results are saying otherwise.
It usually comes down to keeping the ball in the ballpark too, or damage, slugging, as James talked about. You know, doubles and homers usually show up, and sometimes there's a random variance to that. You know, that Garrett Cole taught us that last year in terms of his fly ball to home run ratio, or his home run to fly ball ratio, conversely. So To me, you have to have that killer mentality when you get ahead 0-2, and you have to get ahead more often. As James said, control and the walk rate is still high for him, so he can lose the radar a little bit. But you have to have that killer instinct. When I have two strikes, this is the pitch I go to. I'm going to bury him right now. If there's a little doubt in your mind about which pitch to go to when you do get in that killer, put him away, swing and miss, strike two counts. That's when the trouble arises. There's a seed of doubt in your mind as which pitch to go to when I do finally get ahead and have a chance to strike somebody out.
Dylan Cease finished last year second in the American League in ERA, obviously second in Cy Young voting as well. It leads us to our next topic, gentlemen. Entering today, the top five ERA leaders across Major League Baseball are Sonny Gray, leading the charge with a 1.35 ERA, Justin Steele, who we mentioned moments ago, Bryce Elder of the Braves, Shane McClanahan, and Eduardo Rodriguez. They all have sub-2 ERAs. I'm not expecting all of them to continue to light the world on fire at this pace, but will any of these pitchers remain in the top five by the end of this season, or even a month from now? And I need to preface this, because when I sent this question out to you guys, Shane McClanahan didn't do what he did against the Orioles yet. So he entered into this top five. It feels like there's a little low-hanging fruit here. So maybe outside of Shane McClanahan, are any of these? Alex Cobb is the next one. So Alex Cobb is six. So out of those five, do you think any of them are still there by season's end?
One thing they all do well is keep the ball in the ballpark, which is a big key, obviously, in today's game. Sonny Gray's yet to give up a home run this year. Of all the pitchers, I think he's probably got the best chance to stay in there. Sonny Gray, I think he's figured out his formula. Sonny Gray's a complex dude. You know, I mean, we saw that when he was with the Yankees. He didn't get the help he needed. We heard CC Sabathia talk about he needed somebody who could help him with a more analytical approach, because he's that kind of guy who likes the new school more and wants the information. He's figured it out. And to me, it's platoon specific. And as I just mentioned, maybe with Dylan Cease, you know, how do I go about getting out righties and how do I go about getting out left-handed batters? Sonny Gray's got it down. Against lefties, it's a curveball, four-seam, changeup approach. And against righties, it's a cutter, sinker, sweeper approach. Very definitive on how he goes about the dominant pitches he's going to use when he's in a platoon advantage situation. To me, it's just remarkable. His curveball's got a 176 opposing batting average against lefties. Against righties, it's the cutter sweeper. Sweeper a 152 batting average against for Sonny Gray. So I kind of marvel at that. Sonny throws six different pitches, a lot of different looks, sinkers, four-seamers. But he's figured out how I go about getting lefties out and how I go about getting righties out. When you look at somebody like Justin Steele, it's kind of a two-pitch pitcher. You know, 95% of the time he's throwing fastballs or sliders. But his slider has been devastating this year, and it's really sweeping. He's got 9.1 inches of extra break to the average slider. Horizontal movement is tremendous there. And Alex Cobb on down the list, almost set 75-80%. It's going to be a sinker or a splitter. So when I look at two-pitch dominant pitchers, if you fall off on one of those pitches a little bit, or the third time through the order, you might become susceptible. I those are the guys I would have a little bit of a red flag on as far as your question, staying in the top five ERA choices. Eduardo Rodriguez has got some mixes. He can mix it up a little bit, but he's kind of four-seam cutter dominant as well. So Sonny Gray's the guy for me who's going to stay in there because, as I said, he's figured out the formula on which pitches to use when.
I'll take Sonny too. I'll agree there. And he misses bats. So in the American League, he has the sixth highest strikeout rate. Otani, Gausman, Logan Gilbert, McClanahan, Pablo Lopez, his teammate, and then Sonny. And, you know, he has a bit more of a track record than some of the other guys. So I'll stick with Sonny, but I want to highlight two guys, because you look at you go to the other side of the ledger, you know, the high ground ball rate guys. And we mentioned Steele. He jumps out. Alex Cobb has the highest ground ball rate in the National League, followed by Marcus Stroman and then Bryce Elder. So Cobb and Elder are two guys that are in the top three there. And it gives you less wiggle room, a little less margin for error when you're more of a pitch to contact guy or a high ground ball guy. But you buy yourself a lot of leeway with those ground balls, because when it helps you limit home runs. And if you look at the league averages on grounders versus flies and liners. Yeah, it sounds really obvious, but there's a reason why, you know, launch angle and things like that have become so in vogue. When you hit a ground ball in MLB this year, the league average is 248 and the slugging percentage is only 272, very little damage. If you do get a hit, it's going to be a single. But then you go to flies and line drives, fly balls and line drives. The MLB average is 450 and the slugging percentage is 858. So when you talk about teams wanting to prioritize keeping the ball down on the ground, it's guys like that that really stand out. So I'll take Sonny, but some of the other guys have been able, it doesn't seem like as much of a mirage as some other April or May ERA leaderboards might in previous years.
Yeah, Elder's slider too, sinker slider approach. Everything goes down, a sinker sinks. It's not horizontal movement, it's really vertical. His game, he's even a sinker slider guy that's more of a vertical movement guy, is kind of unusual, a little bit of an outlier. Sinker sliders, you mostly think of an east to west style. Maybe a little bit of run or more horizontal movement both ways. He gets more vertical movement, down with a slider, down with a sinker. And it is already, I think, on a slider, a -9 run value on that particular pitch. So, yeah, great call on Bryce Elder as well.
I miss those guys with that big, heavy sinker that just bowling ball drop. A couple guys that I love from the early to mid-2000s, Chin-Ming Wong, Brandon Webb.
Brandon Webb has some excellent years that often go unnoticed when you look back at recent baseball history. Brandon Webb was the top pitcher in the game at one point. Yeah. I'm going with Sonny Gray. I believe in what he's doing more than anybody else in that list at the moment for the long haul. I asked Aaron Boone when we were in Minnesota. I remember him like, hey, like first thing that pops up to you. And he's like, spin rate is just absurd. It's always been like that, but he's just taking it to another level. Like we are seeing Oakland Sonny Gray amplified. He's just at a whole nother level, and he's going to get paid in this offseason. He's going to be a free agent after this, so he's pitching for a contract. I'm interested to see how that ends up with him. Will the Twins entertain trying to extend him before this season's over? Because he also hinted, I think, when he was talking with CC Sabathia on his podcast, like, he wants another crack at a big market. So
he's figured it out. He has an elite pitch design now. Yeah. Everything he was asking for, he's received, and he's really taken it and run with it. So of all the pitchers on the list, all the pitchers in the big leagues, you talk about pitch design, he is at or near the top in terms of, as I said before, the way he's going about it, the type of pitches he's using, and the platoon advantage he exposes.
Yeah, big Sonny Gray fan. Keeping an eye on him, what he's doing with the Twins. You mentioned Bryce Elder. Perhaps a lot more is going to be asked of Bryce Elder coming up here, because right before we came on to record this episode, the Braves announced that Max Fried is heading to the injured list with a left forearm strain. So the details are light. We do not know the severity of the injury at the time of this recording, but you never want to hear a pitcher going down with a forearm strain. That is for sure. It's Fried's second trip to the IL, first time with arm trouble here this season. Even though the Braves' rotation seems stable, how tenable of a situation is this for Atlanta?
Well, he's your ace. Yeah, that's a big blow, no doubt about it. Now, the Braves can overcome it. They also develop pitching very well. Probably even some names we haven't even heard of yet that they can go down and reach and call somebody up. But you can't replace Max Fried. You're always worried when you hear forearm strains, when you can't help but think about, is this a precursor to Tommy John? Specifically where the pain is kind of matters. We don't know for sure. It's a minimum. Just don't pick up a ball for 2 weeks. A lot of times when you get this kind of situation, and Max Fried is so valuable that they're going to be cautious with him. So this may be an extended period of time for Max Fried. It could be at least a month, maybe 6 weeks before maybe he's ready to even get on the mound again, for that matter. So certainly speculative on my part, but I just know you're going to play it safe with Max Fried because he's that valuable. The Braves have enough depth. I think they can overcome it, especially offensively, a well-rounded team. But yeah, it's a huge blow. He's your guy. He's your number one starter in postseason. He's the guy you post up that can beat anybody on any given day. And there's no two ways about it. It's a big blow.
And like you said, with any time the forearm becomes a topic, that's really alarming. Fried talk about the most important pitchers to their team or the most valuable pitchers over the last few years, Max Fried has got to be near the top of the list. If you look at Baseball Reference, wins above replacement since 2019, Max Fried is fourth among major league pitchers behind Garrett Cole, Zach Wheeler, and Max Scherzer. And we've seen him lead a team to a championship. And it's going to be hard to – you have a guy like that that's missing for an extended period of time. There's no really replacing him. As far as the Braves as a whole, they'll probably be okay. They have a top five offense. You still have Spencer Strider. Bryce Elder has really carried a lot of the load too, as we've mentioned. So I think the Braves in the big picture – are going to be okay, but we just got our fingers crossed on Max Fried.
Fried is crucial to the Braves making another World Series run. It's hard to leave him off a top 10 pitching list if you're doing it at any point here in 2023. For me, he might be like a top five, top six pitcher, starting pitcher, that is. So we hope that the stay on the injury list is minimal for Max Fried. Another World Series contender, heck, they're the reigning champs, the Astros. They got bad news on two of their starting pitchers. We touched on this last week, but we got a clearer picture of what the time frame is going to be like with Houston without Jose Urquidy, who's out till mid-July. Luis Garcia is done for the season, getting Tommy John surgery. And now you have some less proven arms in this Astros starting rotation. Guys, is this the most vulnerable we have seen the Astros in recent memory?
Short answer is yes, in my mind. I always thought that Justin Verlander was going to be a bigger blow that wouldn't rear its head until postseason. Yankee fans know that. You know, he was the guy that stuffed the Yankees in a couple of big postseason runs there. Like, in fact, if he was a balance of power shifter going back to his original trade to Houston, where the rumors he was going to be a Yankee. So Yankee fans know that all too well to go revisit back when Justin Verlander was originally traded from the Tigers. He's going to be missed. Hunter Brown moves to the forefront, a young pitcher that was touted as being a frontline starter in waiting. It's okay. We'll let Justin Verlander go. We have Hunter Brown. We have obviously Framber Valdez could be a number one guy, but when everybody gets bumped up, Framber Valdez was a great number two starter last year. You know, Luis Garcia or certainly Christian Vasquez was a great number three starter. Garcia was a great number four starter. Now all those guys get bumped up, and now you have these injuries. It's like, okay, Hunter Brown's your number two or your number three starter now. He was supposed to be your fifth starter. You know, that's the residual effect that you have sort of when you lose somebody like Verlander and then you have a couple of big injuries. Yes, they are vulnerable right now. They still have a great team. They still are going to get healthy on the offensive side, get Michael Brantley back, who's a great player for them. High contact guy. Getting Abreu going at first base is a big deal for them. He's hit like one home run in the last 90 or so games going back to last year. So, you know, that's a big deal for them. But yes, to answer your question in a long-winded way, yeah, they are more vulnerable now than we've seen them in recent years.
Sort of like the Braves discussion, you know, long term, they're still going to be okay. I still think they're the team to beat in the West for sure, with all respect to Texas. But even though Jose Urquidy and Luis Garcia, you know, weren't, you know, earth-shatteringly great pitchers, they stabilized the back of the rotation and they were consistent. So when you lose them, and you see this with some other teams too, when you're missing multiple starting pitchers at the same time, it just puts that much more pressure on the entire staff, trickling all the way down to the bullpen. Now, you still have Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, and Hunter Brown. That's a really good top three to start with. But now you're introducing Brandon Belak, who has been more of a swingman or a long relief type. Now he's got to take a rotation spot. Brown, you were able to kind of get his feet wet in the back of the rotation. He's taking on more responsibility. We're still a long way from Lance McCullers getting back. He threw his first full bullpen the other day. But even then, were we talking about sometime in June return for him, and then Urquidy in July. So it's going to be tough sledding in the short term for Houston, but I think long term they'll be okay.
As an aside real quick here, anybody, you know, just because this is a pitching podcast, anybody see Bryce Miller throw the baseball the other day for the Seattle Mariners? Incredible. That's what that's a make or break. You know, that's what Houston needs, or anybody, the Yankees. You look around on these injuries. Who's next in line? You got to really do your research and look in the minor leagues on who's next. Bryce Miller with the Seattle Mariners. When you're looking, is Houston vulnerable or not? I look at Houston's pitching and then I compare it to Seattle's pitching. I'm like, oh my, you know, Bryce Miller, if you haven't seen him throw a baseball, you need to watch him throw a baseball. His vertical movement, his riding action, that gravity defying four seamer is elite at or near the top in terms of rankings already in the big leagues. And he's a rookie in his first start. Somebody to watch. Go take a look. Watch his next start. Bryce Miller, very exciting young pitcher on the Mariners side. And that's the reason I bring that up is you kind of compare, you know, apples and oranges or whatever you want to call it. Seattle's got a really strong pitching staff that has been enhanced by Bryce Miller. Now who's next for Houston? Who's going to replace these guys? Who can they call up? You really need to be wired in on their overall depth in their minor league system right now.
Two games for Bryce Miller. He had the electric debut in Oakland with Mason Miller on May 2nd, 6 innings of one run ball with 10 strikeouts and no walks. Then he gets his first big league win on, what was that, Sunday against Houston, 6 shutout innings against the Astros. So Seattle, a team with a rich pitching staff, and now they might have found a real gem in Miller here.
Seattle's forced to kind of dip into that pitching depth. They're having some rotation injuries. Robbie Ray's done for this season. A guy like Miller forced to step up. You have the Astros with their issues. The Angels are playing well. The Rangers are obviously playing well. Will they be for real? Got to keep playing games in order to find that out. Same for the Angels here. But, you know, I'm with you guys. Like, Houston is still the top dog until they aren't. They deserve that pedestal. And that's just their reputation right now in the AL West, which is evolving into a fascinating division as we go along here in 2023. Hey, everybody, take the hassle out of mealtime this spring with HelloFresh, because they are delivering pre-portioned ingredients and easy-to-prepare recipes right to your door. You have plenty to do with the weather warming up, a lot of activities. Don't take so much time preparing quality meals. Skip the checkout lines at the food store, because HelloFresh has dinner covered. It keeps your taste buds on their toes with 40 different recipes and over 100 seasonal and convenience items to choose from each week. And this May, HelloFresh is celebrating Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. You can try limited time authentic recipes created in partnership with Chef Serbi Sani. She is a creative force behind some of Michelin-starred New York City restaurants, and you will be able to enjoy some culture tastes that she is providing right to your door and straight into your own kitchen. No worries if you are not a pro in the kitchen. HelloFresh's foolproof recipes arrive pre-portioned and easy to prepare in just a few steps. One thing I really like about this, I got my order and they have the cooking time on the step-by-step to-do list, and it is accurate. I've made about 3 or 4 meals and they have hit that timestamp right on the button. So go to HelloFresh.com/slab16. Again, our code slab16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/slab16 and start using America's number one meal kit today. Speaking of depth pieces, players being forced to step up, we know what the Yankees rotation has been since the start of the season. Seems like they're going to be getting Luis Severino back from his lat strain. He's set to make his first rehab start at AAA this week. Maybe 2 rehab starts before he gets back to the major league rotation. They want him around 70 to 80 pitches. When you take a look at what happened in the bullpen over the last week, some key arms who may have been relied on for this 2023 season, Jonathan Loaisiga, that's definite. Lou Trevino pitched really well when he came over to the Yankees last year. Both of them are out long-term. Trevino done for the season. Loaisiga probably won't see him until August or September. So don't even count on him for 2023 at this point. I'm wondering, how easy of a call would it be to have a guy like Clark Schmidt, who's proven himself in the bullpen in the past, easily move back to the bullpen if and when Luis Severino returns? Is that an easy call for you?
Well, yeah, on its surface, yeah. I mean, you make a great point. But to me, you have to look at the overall depth of potential starting pitchers and going down into the AAA rotation. Randy Vasquez is on the roster and probably the next in line in terms of a depth piece if you have injuries. I might be more inclined to keep Schmidt in the rotation and then send Johnny Brito to AAA to keep him ready as a stretched out starter, your number six starter at that point in terms of reserves and in depth. If you move Clark Schmidt to the bullpen, you lose him as a starter. He no longer remains stretched out. He's going to become, you know, a multi-inning reliever who gets shortened up in terms of his workload. And now you're down to Randy Vasquez as your sixth best starter. So if you have an injury or somebody else goes down, do you feel comfortable with that at this point? He's been a little spotty in AAA so far. He certainly has talent, big sweeping slider, big fastball, controls the issue with him. Who's next? You know, who's your depth? So if you, that's the only problem I have with Clark Schmidt to the bullpen, you give up a piece in terms of your overall depth of starting pitching reserves. That's a problem for the Yankees right now.
I get the idea of wanting to fully exhaust the option of starting before you go back to the bullpen. But Schmidt, he showed that he was really good in relief. He had a 2.74 ERA out of the bullpen last year. So even though he's had a bumpy road here, I feel like if he did have to go back to the bullpen, I feel like he wouldn't miss a beat and he would improve overall. I like Johnny Brito. He has a 3.81 ERA outside of the disaster game against the Twins when he gave up seven runs and got knocked out in the first inning. So you look at the 6.08 ERA, it's pretty much more than two runs of that. It's just from one game alone. I like Brito. Hopefully the Yankees can start to get a little more hole in the rotation. And Domingo Germán has made some promising strides. So as far as Schmidt goes, I think he could excel in the bullpen. And if Michael King moves up a peg, then that opens up the middle innings if you need a multi-inning fireman type.
All this centers around Carlos Rodon, by the way. Can you count on him coming back? And then you could say, all right, that's fine. Now, you know, we've got enough depth here. You know, Carlos Rodon and Severino are both back and valuable and contributing. Then that gives you a little more leeway to go, okay, Clark Schmidt, boom, we're going to slide you right into the bullpen and not miss a beat, not worry about an extra piece or an extra starter that we need to keep around.
Well, David, that blends beautifully into my next question for you and James and Dan Work. Let's get you in here too, because I want the pulse of the fans regarding Carlos Rodon. Gonna get a cortisone shot in his back. It's scheduled for today, the day that we're recording this podcast. What do you make of this situation with Rodon, and when do you think he'll see him on the mound in a Yankee uniform? Go with David first. What do you think, Coney?
Well, it's obviously a major concern on a number of different levels. What do we have here? What does a chronic back issue mean? What's really going on there? What did he feel in spring training? We know he's had some forearm issues and some arm issues in the past. The problem is that, okay, you get the cortisone shot, you're back. Okay, you get healthy again. When does he get ramped up? When will we actually see him pitching in the pinstripes? And then when that happens, he's always a guy that's susceptible to regression because he relies so much on his power. It's not like he's a craftsman, like he has four or five different pitches, like a Sonny Gray. He really relies on power, fastball dominant pitcher, fastball slider. Once he loses a little bit of velocity on the top end, what kind of a pitcher does that become? Does he start to develop a changeup? How's Carlos Rodon going to look on down the road in terms of how he evolves as a pitcher if he does lose a little bit of stuff because of some of these injuries? You know, this is all speculative. It all remains to be seen, but obviously very concerning.
James, what do you think?
Well, the idea of a chronic back issue when he hasn't been on the injured list before for any back issues is eye-opening. And I know he had his checkered injury past early in his career, but he's coming off two healthy seasons, two dominant seasons. So at this point, we'll see him when we see him, right? It's you can't bank on, oh, he's returning by X date, so we just have to tread water with so-and-so until then. It's such a murky situation right now that we don't know when he's going to throw his next pitch in earnest in pinstripes.
What say you, Dan Rourke?
What say I look at it as the same song and dance as every single year with a lot of Yankee players. Right now, I'm just at, hey, get healthy for October, and I think we'll be all good. Only thing, though, is, and I said this about Stanton going into the years, in the end, that's fine. Ultimate end goal, you know, be there for October, perform in October, that's great. But we do kind of got to get there first. Now, I don't have much doubt about the Yankees making the playoffs, but if we had Carlos Rodon right now, I mean, like, my outlook for the question I think you're about to ask soon about the division might be a totally different outlook. Case that, you know, he may not come back till, I don't know, August at best. It's frustrating. I don't want to say, you know, call him Carl Pavano or anything like that, because, you know, of course, I wasn't able to watch Pavano. I wasn't able to experience it live. Everything I read about the dude is that was more of like an attitude thing. He just seemed like he didn't want to be there. Everything I've heard about Rodon, that's the opposite of the case. I mean, I heard he's like the most competitive pitcher in baseball. So I look forward to him coming back. But yeah, man, it's frustrating. I'll take his wife's word for it. That's that he said he is. She said he is going to pitch this season, so that's a pretty good source. But no, dude,
reliable source. Yes,
yeah, pretty reliable source. But also, like, man, every single year this goes down, it's frustrating, dude. I almost don't even know what to say about it. But
it's a string of bad luck when you think about it. The last several moves that have been made, you know, if you're a general manager or an organization, you get all the information you can. You got to make a bet. You got to make. You know, we're going to bet on Frankie Montas. Didn't work out. It's easy to second guess and go back and, hey, did we get all the medicals? What are we doing? Let's look at our protocol here. Are we doing things right? Are we getting all the information we need? Scott Efros, how could you have known? You know, you made the trade. Wesneski's now in the rotation for the Cubs. We got Efros. He looked great when he came over, sidearm reliever. Next thing you know, he's out. And now Rodon, you know, it's just kind of a series of bad luck. Bets that the Yankees have had, and I'm not sure you can go back and say, you know what, there were mistakes made in the decision-making process. I don't think I could say that at this point. I don't have all the information, but it is eye-opening that, wow, it's one after another. All these moves and all these bets that have been made have all ended up injured.
Well, look at how many of the topics on today's show are, this guy's hurt, that guy's out.
Yeah.
How does this team recover from missing this standout pitcher? Pitching is really bad for your health. And taking a step back, Rodon, everybody knew his history, and that was baked into the acquisition cost. There's a reason why he got half as much money as Gerrit Cole in his contract. It's because he had two healthy seasons under his belt, even though it was the two most recent seasons. So that's that part that gets baked in. And some of the other deals, you know, Lou Trevino was so good that I was calling it the Lou Trevino trade, not the Frankie Montas trade. But he got hit by lightning in a way that a lot of pitchers do. And Scott Efros, they missed him in October last year as well. So sometimes it's just you hate to see injuries pop up, but I don't think there's a lot of hand wringing in recent weeks that, you know, there's something uniquely Yankees about why all these players are hurt. And other than 2019 and this year, these are the only two seasons really where they were at the top of the games missed on the injured list leaderboard that we've broken out from time to time. But there was the 2019 next man up season, and now this.
Here's what stinks about this bad luck. We are maybe like one, maybe two bad updates away from entertaining the thought of Frankie Montas may get throwing a pitch for the Yankees this season faster than Carlos Rodon. So
think about that for a minute. Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
And I can't talk much crap about these moves, because, you know, like, what, the second they go down, I'm tweeting out, I'm like, let's go. This is, we get Frankie Montas. I'm like, we don't need Luis Castillo. We got Montas. We're good to go. Rodon hyped as hell. So it's hard for me to really ever criticize any of these moves. I will say, though, you know, I'm not the GM of the Yankees for a reason. Could you maybe say, like, you know, guys, injury history, you should expect a thing like this? But yeah, I certainly can't talk any crap myself, because I was stoked when we got them all. So
now you know why the acquisition cost was so high for Luis Castillo. You know, the equivalent of a Yankee trade for Castillo would have been both Peraza and Volpe, among others, maybe even Jason Dominguez, but certainly two other prospects. There was four for one, and your top two prospects on top of it. That was the acquisition cost that Seattle was willing to pay, and that, you know, the Yankees weren't. They got outbid. Think about that for a minute. And that's how valuable a guy like Luis Castillo is. And even with that being said, nobody's immune from injury. It can happen to anybody.
Which still, I wouldn't do that deal, honestly. I wouldn't give up Volpe and Peraza and Dominguez for Castillo.
But you look at what the Mariners gave up. We don't even know if that would have been enough in the first place. So looking at the return that Cincinnati got from Seattle, we can't even – it's almost like the Castillo thing was a little pie in the sky, like similar to Juan Soto. People were entertaining – people were saying – imagining Yankee lineups with Juan Soto in it. That was never going to happen because they didn't have the pieces – to send to Washington. It's a similar scenario with the Soto trade, with the Castillo trade, hitter, pitcher last year. It does not seem like they had the prospect capital to pull off those deals.
All right, David, Sunday Night Baseball. What do you have this weekend? Where are you going to be?
Fenway Park. The surprising Red Sox. Chris Sale's back. I'm not sure who we're going to get pitching-wise. And as of yet, it hasn't quite been announced. And the Cardinals. So St. Louis Cardinals at Fenway Park, kind of an interesting matchup just because of interleague play and the new schedule, this year, the balanced schedule. Everybody's playing everybody. We get to see the Cardinals at Fenway Park, two historic franchises, National League and American League.
Really quick before we head out, quick question. Kenley Jansen on the verge of picking up his 400th career save for the Red Sox here. He gets to 400. Is he a Hall of Famer?
I still think you need a big finish to your career. Just the number of saves, the numerical number has been devalued over the years because of, win probability added, different ways to look at relief pitchers now, as opposed to just, counting number of stats, so to speak. You got to look at other things now, peel back the layers in terms of high leverage and things like that. But yes, he's in that argument. I still think he needs a big finish to his career to get there. But relievers are underappreciated as it is, though, and underrepresented in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. So, yeah, he should be talked about.
The reliever standards for Hall of Famers is still very much in the early stages because it's a relatively new position that's only, decades old. Love Kenley Jansen. I hope he gets 400 soon, although because him and Craig Kimbrel were neck and neck going into the season, my dream was that they would both get 400 on the same day. So we have Kenley at 399, Craig Kimbrel at 397. So I'm hoping for, a little slide back from the Red Sox. They can put that on hold for a little bit. Kimbrel can get a couple more saves and then 400 on the same day.
That's the best of both worlds. Kenley Jansen could hold off for save number 400, maybe until Sunday Night Baseball when Dave is on the call with Carl and Eduardo. And in between there, the Red Sox could take a step back for the Yankees' sake, at least for people like Dan Work and their sanity for what we're going through right now. Guys, that is going to do it here for this episode this week. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel so you do not miss a beat with what we are streaming each and every week. And look forward to Sunday Night Baseball with the Red Sox and the Cardinals from Fenway. David will be on the call. For Coney, for James Smythe, for Dan Work, our outstanding producer, this is Justin Shackle. We will talk to you next week on Tone the Slab, pitching with David Cohn, a production of John Boy Media.